Blog Talk Radio.
Bismillahi Rahman Rahim. This is an interview with Imam Water Sadeen Muhammad, with the help of Allah on behalf of the Muslim community in this area and also our listening audience. We'd like to thank you, Brother Imam, for allowing us an opportunity to meet with you and to ask you a few questions. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Very pleased to be with you again.
Yes, sir. The last time that you was with us was in the latter part of 1984.
Yes, sir.
Where we've had an opportunity to ask you questions regarding the growth and the development of the Islamic presence under the name from the Nation of Islam to now the American Muslim Mission. And in doing so, we concentrated specifically on that area. If you don't mind, Brother Imam, at this time, perhaps we can focus on the area or time from April 20th and 21st, what was identified as our 10-year anniversary, to the future regarding perhaps the Islamic presence in America and some of the contributions that have been made since that time and what you perhaps may see for the future.
Yes.
If we can.
Yes.
I would like to begin in that area by basically asking you, what was the significance of this nationwide event that had taken place last April that had actually carried across the country, where many Muslims have met in every region of the country in what is considered to be the regional centers throughout America? What did you see as being the significance, and what statement do you feel that we were making by having such an event called the 10 Years of Progress Anniversary?
Yes. For me, the most important benefit from that national meeting is the emphasis that was put on normal Islamic community. Normal Islamic community. As you know, we have come from nationalistic ideas of Islam and a kind of theological idea of Islam, whereas in the religion neither is recognized. The Quran, our holy book, and our religion doesn't recognize nationalism as such, but see the whole humanity as one nation. You know, the whole humanity is presented as one nation that should be obedient to God and should have as its main concern obedience to God. And the political nations or groupings, man's political groupings, get very little attention in our religion. That is because God wants us to see that we should first organize upon basis of faith and duty to God, you know. And that implies righteousness and a proper treatment of each other, of our fellow man, etc., etc. So the main benefit from that meeting, as I hope for, is that sense of belonging as Muslims to the broad international membership of Muslims as a normal and natural part of the Islamic worldwide community. Mm-hmm. That was the main interest we wanted, that's the main benefit we wanted out of that. Mm-hmm. And I think we got it.
Yes, sir. I think it was achieved also. I was
praise
there.
Be to Allah.
And I certainly enjoyed myself in the direction and comments that you've made during that, and I would say historic, because to me it was very historic. There are a number of events that we can think of, members of what was once known as the Nation of Islam, American Muslim Mission. There are a number of events that we can identify as being historic. Certainly you coming into office was a very historic occasion, and the metamorphosis that Allah has blessed you to evolve the community from that period of time in 1975. But also in the significance that you shared with us of the 10 years anniversary, there was a comment that you had made that the UPI had shortly after sent out messages throughout the country in the various publications, and that was the comment of disbanding or dissolving what was once known as the American Muslim Mission. Mm-hmm. Could you share with our listeners what was the what was your reasoning behind that, and what is it that you hope to achieve as a result?
Mm-hmm. For the most part, the dissolution had taken place. We were only announcing it after it had already taken place.
Mm-hmm.
For several years, as you know, we have been inviting the leaders of the community to practice true Islamic democracy, to have people participate in the decision making for the community that affect their lives directly or indirectly, and to identify as Muslims with all Muslims on this earth. We have been praying in unity with all Muslims on this earth now for 10 years, right? Approximately,
yes,
almost,
yes,
10 years. It was right after I became leader that we accepted the prayer, to perform the 5 day of prayers and to turn towards the Qibla, the Holy House in Mecca. We've been doing that for many years, and that sense of belonging to the international Muslim community, sense of belonging to the national community was already there. What we actually accomplished when we made the announcement was, I think, reinforcing that, and perhaps bringing it to members who were not aware, because national attention brings more people together, gives us a bigger audience, and whatever you say at a national meeting, it has more impact, carries more force or more weight in terms of the importance that you place on it,
mm-hmm,
than what you said locally at local meetings. So I only see an increased emphasis was placed upon that, and perhaps more people were made aware of it.
So at this time, Imam Muhammad, then in short, then, how would you define then your relationship as an Islamic leader, as a man who has brought a community out of actual what we term in al-Islam shirk, from actual disbelief in a nationalistic view of seeing things, to now an Islamic community? How would you define your relationship with the once known American Muslim Mission?
Well, I see that relationship now as past history, and I think it should be viewed by the members of the Muslim society as just past history. We were in the process, as you said, a gradual process of bringing our community to conform to the basic teachings and principles of our holy book, from what was conceived as a social reform movement with strong nationalistic flavor to it, to conform to what is really Quranic teaching, the teachings of our holy book. And in that process, we had to undo a lot of things that were done that is not correct for Muslims, but were thought to be correct at that time for black people.
Mm-hmm. Are you referring to now the Nation of Islam?
Yes, sir, the Nation of Islam.
Yes, sir.
And in the process of bringing the image to conform to the concept of community in our holy book, I took away a language that was really acceptable language,
mm-hmm,
in the Islamic world. The Nation of Islam. We were called the Nation of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
But because we were not the Nation of Islam,
yes,
I took away the Nation of Islam, mm-hmm, as a name. because we were not the Nation of Islam. We were a social reform, a black nationalistic social reform organization, community. And taking away that tie, that name, Nation of Islam, it served two purposes. First, it stopped us from being put imaged in the world as the Nation of Islam, when the true Nation of Islam is what we are now.
Yes,
you see. Also, it gave us a chance to kind of come away from the, I would say, intensified kind of attention we were given and interest we had in nationalism. Because we thought of the Nation of Islam really as a black nation.
Yes.
So really it was just black nationalism under the label or the name Islam.
Yes.
You see. So after doing that, then I felt that, we've been running, we've been running and fearing that we would not be accepted in this country and running from our responsibility as citizens in this country. Feeling that we are desperate people who have to have their own home, national home,
yes,
their own national life separate from the life of this nation. I said, when in fact we are just as much a legitimate part of this nation as any other race or any other ethnic group that has come here.
Yes, sir.
So I felt that the earth belonged to Allah and America is the earth.
Yes, sir.
Not in the sky, it's there. And America belongs to Allah. And America belongs to Allah, God that is. America belongs to God. And America is God's house, the earth is God's house.
Yes.
So if I live on this planet and this God, this is God's earth and the earth is God's mosque,
mm-hmm,
you see?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, now, what sense does it make for me as a descendant of forefathers who have put so much into this land, in terms of their suffering, in terms of their defense of this land,
yeah,
the loss of black lives overseas,
mm-hmm,
in terms of the hard work, the labor, their contribution to the building of the economy of this country in the early days of industrialization,
yeah,
and before. So I say, what right do we have now to give all of this up? Who are we speaking for, ourselves or all of those forefathers who make their contribution, you see? So this is the way I thought. And then I began to have more respect and more love and feel a closeness to not only to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and men like Malcolm X, but also to the Du Bois, to Booker T. Washington,
mm-hmm,
and to many of the women who have made great contribution to the spirit of the progressive spirit of the African Americans,
mm-hmm,
up from hardship and up from oppression and up from slavery, you see.
Yes.
So I began to identify with them and say, well, they're not Muslims, they didn't call themselves Muslims, but we are all in the same kind of trend.
Yes.
And this is Islamic for me to be in that trend.
Yes.
It's not Islamic for me to be out of that trend, you see. So as a Muslim, I began to see that really to be good Muslim in this country is to support all good structures. To be a good Muslim in this country is to support all good efforts, especially courageous efforts like was made by our people to get an equal share, to get recognition,
yeah,
as citizens in this country.
Yeah.
That's a courageous effort. It's a noble effort. It's a legitimate effort. It's justice. And to not to help that trend and to be a part of that, to me, is not Islamic.
Yeah.
To reject a country that have repented, to me, is un-Islamic.
Mm-hmm.
When the country was segregated and was denying its non-white citizens, the blacks,
yeah,
the opportunity that it was given other citizens to eat in public places, to ride on public transportation, to have equal chance for employment and growth in the country,
mm-hmm,
when it was doing that and the courts were supporting it and legislature was supporting it, then I can see a justification for the position Honorable Elijah Muhammad took.
Yeah.
Because if the country tells you, if the courts tell you, that's a powerful body. If the courts of the land don't give you justice, then you justify it to say, well, I want my own separate nation.
Mm-hmm.
You see, or I want out, take me back to my father's land, my motherland, or give us a separate nation. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was justified in going to the extremes that he went to.
Mm-hmm.
under those conditions.
Yeah.
The circumstances that were existing at that time, Jim Crowism, segregation, ugly segregation, that was horrible not only here in America but in the international world.
Mm-hmm.
But once that was removed and this country repented, then I feel that it's un-Islamic then for us to continue to look at the country in the same light.
Mm-hmm.
A repenting person is loved by God.
Yeah.
So if a repenting person is loved by God, then a repenting society should be loved by God. And America, by virtue of what it did,
mm-hmm.
to change the ugly state of this society from one of a segregated nation,
yeah.
to one of a united, a truly united nation,
yeah.
In my opinion, was true repentance on the part of the leadership of this country, the civic leaders, the government leaders, et cetera, et cetera, and the people and the general population of the country who supported that. It is a true sign of repentance that this country repented from its past ways, and that should be accepted. If God accepts the person who repents,
mm-hmm.
then God also accepts the society that repents. And if the society repents, then we should accept that the society has repented,
mm-hmm.
and then no more look at the society in the same light.
Mm-hmm.
So in doing that, I said, well, hell, this is excuse the language. Here now we can really do something.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we can really go places. Right, we can now have economic basis and economic programs,
mm-hmm.
within the framework of free enterprise,
mm-hmm.
and do it the way that that the American people do it. And we don't have to be looked upon as a strange growth or an abnormal growth in the American society, and gives us a stronger position.
Yes.
We can defend ourselves better and make progress, pass it on to the children, and don't have to worry about being shut out of America because we are in. That's the way I feel about it.
I think what you've raised, you've really answered a few questions that I had for you already in that statement. One concern I think that is very important to highlight is the question is oftentimes asked by members of the African American community whether or not we have abandoned our relationship, our concern, our thrust as a Muslim community in the area of human rights pertaining to the disenfranchised people of America, primarily the African American, Hispanic or Chicano and others who have been somewhat because of legislative matters or institutionalized racism has been kept out. But I think that you've really answered that question that seemed to have lingered in the minds of many African Americans, whether or not we have abandoned that. I think what you've said is that we're very much a part of that process and of achieving some sense of dignity. Now, with all that you've stated, there have been a number of African Americans who have taken advantage of the changing climate in America. And at the same time, what we do find, however, is that there still seem to be an overwhelming number of people of our race, African Americans, who seem to have not made the connection between seeing or visualizing the opportunities that do exist. What have been, in your estimation, what has been the most detrimental contributing factor to have led many of our people to not to see the opportunity or to go after the opportunity or the changed climate that exists in America?
Well, first the problem is coming from firstly the general mood in the society. When the general mood in the society is constructed, is conducive to intelligent thought and constructive labor, work and effort, then you'll find the underprivileged people are the behind, the people that's behind, the neglected people. If they have leadership, they will be quicker to recognize that leadership and quicker to hear and give attention to what is said for their own benefit. But in a climate like this, the climate that we have now, where people tend to just live for their own personal pleasures, it's very hard to get the attention of people who are not already organized behind some great work or behind some great idea or program or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So first we have to blame the mood, the cultural mood in the society.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the cultural mood or cultural trend and the general mood that is that prevails in the society presently and has prevailed for years now, for several years. And I think the next factor would be the clumsy way that we ourselves as leaders address our concerns and problems. We seem to want to blame somebody right away. We have to blame somebody before we offer our solution, you know. We have to have somebody to blame. We have to get the people behind us in attacking something first, or attacking somebody, you know. Something has to be wrong with the world, or with the nation, or with the government, or with the president,
mm-hmm.
before we can introduce a solution or introduce our observation,
mm-hmm.
present our observation to those people that we want to reach and bring into some kind of collective effort for improvement.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big hindrance. That's a big hindrance, it's a big part of the problem, that our leaders are still motivated by hurt and grievances.
Mm-hmm.
They should be motivated by opportunity.
Yeah.
Opportunity should motivate them. They should see opportunity and then be inspired by opportunity. We have great concepts in our religion that gives us a great sense of worth in God's creation,
mm-hmm.
you know. And we believe that man's potential and capacity for progress and excellence and achievement is unlimited.
Yes.
That man can grow as big as the opportunity in the universe.
Yes.
Right, not just in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
but the opportunity in the whole universe.
Yes,
man can grow as big as that opportunity.
Yes.
And that's what it's there for, you know. So that motivates us. That gives us a sense. We see an opportunity. We see opportunity bigger than the immediate opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
We see opportunities beyond it. Although we have to respect the immediate demands and the immediate opportunities first.
Yes.
If we are truly Muslims and understand our religion, then we are never in need of inspiration. You know,
yes.
We're never sad and,
mm-hmm.
and down and out. You know, we're always excited about life and
mm-hmm.
always excited about new opportunities. And God says, as you know, in Quran, you're very familiar with Quran, I know, that it says, and pause, struggle, and as soon as you have completed one task, enter into another.
Yes.
So don't be idle. Don't do it. Find another exciting horizon, another exciting frontier,
yes.
you know. So that's our religion. And when I see speakers, whether they're politicians or preachers, when I see them, or imams, when I see them coming from that kind of motivation, they're motivated by hurt and motivated by grievances and past hurt and past grievances,
mm-hmm.
and that they're in that spirit, helplessly caught in that spirit, mm-hmm. of leading a campaign
mm-hmm.
fueled by grievances.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells me that this is not going to do any good for us.
Yeah.
I don't care how intelligent a man is. I don't care how educated he is, how equipped he is,
mm-hmm.
as a speaker or as a leader or representative of the people.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to be anything but a negative influence in the life of the masses of people,
mm-hmm.
because they tend to weep.
Yeah.
People who don't have establishment. They don't have successes in their life.
Mm-hmm.
They're already conditioned to weep.
Yes.
And the first thing God does for the people who are down,
mm-hmm.
he lifts them up in spirit. And you can't lift them up in spirit if you tell them the road is all torn out. The road is torn out. The bridge is down. The light is off. You can't get them to lift themselves up in spirit talking to them that way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to talk to them in a very positive way and show them great opportunity.
Yeah.
And anybody who thinks that there's not great opportunity in America, they don't know what's happening in the world.
Yeah. I think that if we can focus in on that provides us with a real solution, not only for Muslims, but for all people,
yes,
to
indeed
find themselves in this situation.
I believe so. I know so. Yes,
yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I would like to, if I can, change the trend of our discussion to a recent incident, or occurrence, I should say, not so much an incident, but an occurrence. And that is pertaining to Mohammed Abdelaziz. I've heard by the time of our airing of this interview, it is expected that he would have been discharged from prison.
Yes.
And for our listeners, Mohammed Abdelaziz is one of the three brothers who was convicted of the assassination of El-Hajj Malik Shabazz,
yes,
commonly known as Malcolm X. And when you came into office, right away, Allah had guided you to restore the name, the character of El-Hajj Malik Shabazz in the eyes of the members of the once-known Nation of Islam, to be one to be respected, and so much so that you have named the Harlem Mosque after El-Hajj Malik Shabazz,
yes,
Masjid Malcolm Shabazz.
Yes. With the support and I would say the will of the people,
mm-hmm,
the majority of the Muslims, they wanted that.
Yes.
I felt that we should do it, and when I introduced it, there was almost 100% support for it.
Yes. So one of the concerns I would like to get, do you have any comment with the discharge of Mohammed Abdelaziz and
yes,
that whole incident?
Yes, I do.
Yes, sir.
Had I not myself had an opportunity to meet him, so I didn't know him before,
mm-hmm,
but I learned of the situation in prison, and there were people who were interested, Muslims from our community, and
yes,
also from the outside, who were interested in looking at his situation,
mm-hmm,
upon what he had, the reputation,
mm-hmm,
that he had gotten for himself,
yes,
as a disciplined, intelligent, disciplined, very, very good inmate.
Mm-hmm.
I went and I met him, and I met another brother who was also convicted along with him.
Mm-hmm.
And the two of them were propagating the faith in the prison and working for the in the interest of the inmates to help them overcome whatever setbacks they had had in life,
mm-hmm,
so that when they are released, they won't have those same burdens on them.
Yeah.
They'll have an opportunity to really establish themselves in the free society when they're released. Now, you can't ignore this when you see a person working hard and very sincerely for the rehabilitation of inmates,
mm-hmm,
and for the propagation of his faith in the right way,
yes,
not as it was taught before. I didn't see them doing anything that was objectionable.
Mm-hmm.
And for Muslims, mm-hmm, they were doing what was proper for Muslims. Their belief was as ours on the outside, and their spirit, the things that they were working for as Muslims on the inside, were exactly what we were working for on the outside. After our, reconversion or conversion from the wrong way.
Yes.
And I said to myself, well, I don't know what they were in the past.
Mm.
But I talked to them, and I just made a point of asking them. I just came out and asked him.
Mm.
I said, well, did you do that? Were you about? He said, no. I said, no. And he said it to me convincingly, you know, convinced me,
mm-hmm,
that he did not participate in the assassination of Minister Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
If I had any suspicion at all that either of those inmates participated in the assassination of Malcolm, I would have nothing to do with it at all.
Yes, sir.
I would leave it to justice, to God, and to justice, and I would have, because I couldn't come into it.
Yes.
But if if the authorities over the life of the inmate release an inmate,
mm-hmm.
we should have to understand that we have to respect their judgment and their intelligence too, you see.
Yes.
So it makes me feel very good now that I felt that way about him, and now mm-hmm. he has been given parole or release.
Yes.
Or been given, he's released.
Yes.
Completely released, given freedom.
That's right.
So, to me, that's very, very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Been given, he's released.
Yes.
Completely released. Given freedom.
That's right.
So, to me, that's very, very satisfying that has happened. I remain convinced that he was not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
He was not guilty. But sometimes associations with certain elements are perhaps their own position
mm-hmm.
in the community,
mm-hmm.
Their image in the community,
yeah.
Because you know they were 100%, they were real strong followers of Prophet Elijah Muhammad,
yes,
both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I was too.
Yes. The other brother, Khalil Islam.
That's right, mm-hmm. Khalil Islam. Mm-hmm. Yeah, both, Abdul Aziz and Khalil Islam, they were very strong followers of Prophet Elijah Muhammad. And I'm sure that they, being young militants, they were very young at that time,
mm-hmm.
being young militants in the Nation of Islam, I'm sure that they perhaps gave that kind of image to other observers,
mm-hmm.
and regretfully to the wife
mm-hmm.
of Malcolm X,
mm-hmm.
Sister Betty Shabazz, you know, that they were the kind that would do anything
mm-hmm.
To get the opposition out of the way, anything out of the way that was opposing or creating problems for the Nation of Islam or the Honorable Elijah Muhammad,
yeah.
you know. I'm aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm aware of many lieutenants and many ministers, in fact about 100% of the ministers
mm-hmm.
were strongly against what Malcolm separating from the Nation of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
They were strongly against him opposing the Nation of Islam,
mm-hmm.
and they themselves fed influences and spirit into the general membership
mm-hmm.
against mm-hmm. Malcolm, you see. And the paper, our newspaper at that time was called Muhammad Speaks.
Mm-hmm.
It pictured Malcolm as a devil
mm-hmm.
with horns, and I saw it. I didn't like it, but I saw it. And any officer, a lieutenant, or just a regular officer supporting the lieutenant
mm-hmm.
Could have presented an image of himself as a supporter of the Nation of Islam, Allah, Elijah Muhammad, that would make another person, especially when they are hurt by the loss of a man like Malcolm X, a wonderful person, suspect that they did it.
Yes.
You see,
mm-hmm.
he could have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're desperate, anxious to get someone convicted,
mm-hmm.
why, you say he did it.
Mm-hmm.
You say he did it. I know he did it.
Yes.
I know he did it. And I don't know what the circumstances was, and who knows what the law did.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even know what the law did. The law could have just covered up and say this is something we have to settle quick
yeah.
and just throw somebody in jail.
Yeah, indicators that suggest that exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you're aware, Brother Imam, but Khalil Islam has not been released.
I know he's not. That's right. I'm aware of that.
And what advice would you offer perhaps the Islamic community and the community at large, those who are interested in him being
I think now we have a new situation. I think we should talk to attorneys
mm-hmm.
and see if there's the opportunity has improved for his release.
Mm-hmm.
If it has, then I'm ready to lend whatever support I can.
Yes, sir.
And we should lend whatever support we can to get him released.
Yes, sir. Alhamdulillah. I'd like to again move to the current situation as we begin to wind down our interview. And knowing that we're now doing this interview in the year of 1985, which is the month of June, June 24th, presently our news media is bombarded now with the situation in Lebanon,
mm-hmm.
and situation that is very distasteful for human beings, period, to see what has been going on and what the implications are, and family feelings and national and international relations are now being challenged and strained at this present time. There's a concern, I think, that that the Muslim community and the non-Muslim community has regarding understanding this situation. And at our radio show last week, we've indicated that this problem did not just occur in Lebanon, but this perhaps can go back quite a few years, that had actually laid the foundation for incidents like this. What would be your advice or your comment regarding the current issue, regarding the hostage situation, and not only just that particular issue, but the problem at large, because it's bigger than just the hostage situation.
Yes. The community itself is what I first feel an obligation to the community, Muslim community itself, because I know what conflict, war involving parties that you support and parties that you don't support can do, you know. We are Muslims, and we feel we should support Muslims. We are Americans, and we feel we should support our nation, you know. So here we are caught in something. We're caught in a situation where it almost forces us to choose between Muslims and our nation. What I would like to say with this opportunity, and I appreciate it, is that that's not the decision. That's not the case. It is not a decision. Although that the first impulse is Muslims and Americans are against each other. I have to choose. Who am I going to support? Muslims or Americans? That's not the case. Certainly Muslims are involved, and America's interest is there too. America is involved, and American soldiers, citizens of America, have lost their lives. Many Muslims have lost their lives. Certainly that's the situation, but that doesn't make it present to us a situation where we have to choose between America and Muslims. No. We should look at it as a very confused situation, and that's what it is. The Middle East situation is a very confused situation. And the biggest trouble is coming from, I would say, hurt, bitterness in the Jew, hurt and bitterness in the displaced Palestinians and Arabs who have been uprooted, taken out of their homes, moved from their homes and put in camps, or left at the mercy of the world society, which is terrible, without a home, without a nation. And Jews who say, well, we finally got our nation, and who were persecuted in under Hitler, under the Nazis, and who lost many millions of lives in a very horrible way, they carry that hurt. So here you have two people very sensitive, and they're carrying a great hurt and great bitterness. Both of them are carrying it. And I believe that what is happening is that there's a blindness in both sides. There's a blindness in the Jewish people who are Zionists, strongly Zionists, and strongly against occupying and dominating that territory. Mm-hmm. And there's the same kind of blindness in the Palestinians now who respond from sentiment to a great extent rather than from intelligent strategy. But I hope that God will bless both Israel, the Jewish people. Many Muslims say Israel is not legitimate as a nation there. Well, I don't want to get into that. I would just like to say my sympathy go out first to the Muslims who have suffered this invasion of their homeland and their lives, whether it's justified upon some promise that God made to the Jews or not. We can't ask a man who says, this is my home, and my mother lived here, my grandmother, grandparents, all of that, they lived here. This is my land. I farmed it for all of these years. It passed down to me from my fathers and my mothers and my grandfathers and my forefathers. You can't say to them that, hey, these people got a scroll an ancient scroll that says that God gave them this land 2,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago. You can't say that to that man, you know. So first my sympathy go out to the Palestinians, to the Muslims and to the Palestinians. But also I believe that that we shouldn't look at every Jew who's in Israel as a devil, because they're not. Many of them are the same kind of hurt, confused people that we find in all suffering nations that can't find peace for themselves or can't get their rights, you know. There are people too that are suffering the same kind of situation. I wish that there was a way for the Jewish people and the Palestinians and the Muslims, the Arabs of that way, to come together and resolve the problem, resolve the matter in a very intelligent way, to follow what is practical and sensible. I wish the Jews could put away all that stuff about God giving them some land, you know. Can you bring God into court? And just talk about what is right, what is justice. And if possible, do it without the involvement of the United Nations, anybody like that. The parties themselves come together and follow an intelligent course and bring justice to that area.
Yeah.
It may come, but what we have, the superpowers, they have an interest too, right?
Yeah.
Not just America, but Russia too.
Mm-hmm.
They all have an interest. And when you got big powers coming in, influencing what's happening in the life of little people, because they have an interest there, it complicates the matter even more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it is. It's a big confusion. And it's best for Muslims to say, no matter what a Muslim is involved in the world, or what a Muslim nation is involved in the world, I'm not going to make decisions until I consult the Quran and the light of Prophet.
Allahu Akbar. Rabbi Mann, really appreciate your insight in that particular situation. And I do feel and see some parallels in what you have identified as some of the problems here in America as to how people approach their problems out of hurt and even some type of even blind emotions. And I can see some parallel that even there.
Yeah, if we have a minute,
yes.
My son, I guess all of us have teenagers who come into the teenage thing, you know, and they got to have that heroes and they take on a different personality and you wonder, is this my child?
Mm.
So we have a young one now, he's 13, he's about 13 and a half now, and he takes on the personality of his associates, his peers, you know, he's a lot of times he just doesn't have patience, he just got to go and he doesn't have patience with things, you know, he doesn't have patience with me sometimes, you know, and so I told him, I said, look, Saudi, I say, I saw you once and I heard that you admired Bruce Lee. I said, well, let me tell you, I saw most of his movies. I said, he's cool. He doesn't get excited. He's cool.
So hopefully that would influence his personality.
Right. That's right. And that's the problem, you know. It's hard for us to deal with these emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Anger, hate, revenge, you know, these are powerful forces.
Yeah.
And but to handle delicate and complicated situations, you just can't have those emotions on your back or in your head,
yeah,
clouding your vision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You got to be cool,
yes,
like Bruce Lee.
Praise be to Allah. Rabbi Mann, first of all, I like to, it's never enough, you want to go on and on, but praise be to Allah, we appreciate the time that you have allotted us today and sharing with us some of your
views. Well, I thank Allah for this program and pray Allah's blessings upon it and upon you all for doing it. It's a good program and a credit to our community and to the society.
Amen.
And I hope to be your guest again, inshallah.
Yes, sir. It's an open invitation, and as I've stated, as time or issues occur and you feel that there's something that you would like to say, our lines are always open for you, Brother Emmanuel.
Well, I'm sure the opportunity will come, will be accepted by me.
Yes, sir.
Because I know that there are needs that we feel to address, and we're very much interested in the East Coast and West Coast,
mm-hmm,
because we have many Muslims in both the East and West Coast.
Yes.
We're very much interested in supporting all the good things that the Muslims are doing mm-hmm. and contributing to that spirit to go ahead and yes. be positive and healthy.
Yes. Alhamdulillah. This is WNWK 105.9 FM. We've just had our interview with Mu'allim Imam Warisuddin Muhammad, and we'd like to express acknowledgement and appreciation for his presence with us today. At this time, we'd like to stay tuned for a break, and we'll be right back shortly.